All right, Genesis chapter 44, I'm calling it the final test, even though Barry panics, it's not the final test. The Genesis 43 closed. The fear that the brothers had for Joseph had been replaced with joy, laughter, and feasting. Joseph's brothers believed all is well. Hey, Simeon is now free. The man, they didn't know it was Joseph, has accepted their money that was accidentally returned from their previous trip. There was a grand banquet held in the honor of the man's house, who was second to Pharaoh. No one else had given such a privilege as to dine with the ruler, save these 11 brothers. There they were, just a few days ago, starving and arguing with their father in a land ravaged by want. Now look at them, dining with the vice president. They have grain for the family back home. They would be leaving in the morning. Hey, life is great. All right, that's where we pick up chapter 44. So let's get into Genesis 44 here. Now, Joseph has now filled his siblings with a false sense of security. They have again failed to confess those past desires to kill him. And in this chapter is recorded the brothers admitting for the third time in Joseph's absence. But the brothers do not communicate their part in his disobedience. So it would not be too much of an assumption to think that Joseph inquired the same of his brothers to find out, so what happened to your other brother? And maybe they just kept overlooking it. We don't know. But now they're leaving for Canaan. Let's read down 1 to 10. 44, 1 to 10. And he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put every man's money into his sack's mouth. Put my cup, the silver cup, in the sack's mouth of the youngest, and his corn money. And he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away, they and their asses. And when they were gone out of the city, and not yet afar off, Joseph said unto his servant, up, follow after the men, and when thou dost overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth? Ye have done evil in so doing. And overtook them. And he spake unto them these same words. And they said unto him, wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that thy servants would do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sacks, mouths before, we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver and gold? With whomsoever, listen to these words, with whomsoever of thy servants it be found, both let him die, and we will be my Lord's slaves, bondmen. And he said, now also let it be according unto thy words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. All right, you got to see the picture here, all right? And I think a lot of things are just absolutely brilliant. After the feast, the brothers prepare to leave. And what made this departure so great was that they didn't even have to pack their provisions. The servants were doing it for them. Beware. That's why they say when you go to the airport, has anybody else packed your belongings? Because you don't know what's put into your bags. So the steward of Joseph did it all for them. And early in the morning, after the feast of the night before, they leave for Canaan. And Joseph gave his steward special instructions. Once again, Joseph had his steward place the money that they had brought back into their bags. Joseph kept the brothers occupied. Maybe he was talking to them about what's it like in Canaan, while the steward followed his instruction. It's amazing how trustworthy some folks are. Had I been one of the brothers, I believe I would have looked in my sack before I left. I do not like to believe that someone could get something on me twice, because the first time they found out they got money in there. Now, everybody must be thinking, that would never happen again. All right? However, this is just what Joseph did to his brothers. They must have been very assured that nothing would befall them. Now, did anybody notice? I'll bring it up in a moment. So here's the plot. The plot is rather simple. Money's placed back in the grain sacks along with Joseph's favorite cup. That's your fill-in. His favorite cup is in one of the sacks. Is it already filled in? All right. Some of this I wasn't able to. I thought I had gotten all as far as I needed to, so some of these are supposed to be changed. But anyway, upon overtaking the brothers, the steward was instructed that he was to accuse the men of rewarding evil for good by stealing Joseph's favorite cup. And these are willing subjects.
Looks like there's no fillings at all.
Because, like I said, I just printed them out. I'm not ready. All it's right. All done, but it's not been corrected or not made, fill in for the students. The brothers are willing subjects for this plot. Their pride is so great that the spokesman of the group, Judah, makes a very foolish vow. That whomsoever it is that stole the cup must die, and the rest must be bondservants. Be careful. Remember, somebody else made a foolish statement about who did that should die. I'm thinking of David. When he found out about the man who had one lamb and the other man stealing the lamb, he was himself, yes. So he made a foolish vow. Judah is partially right in his thinking and answer, for they did not pack nor load their grain. The brothers are doing their best to escape without admitting their past sin. Their desire is so great that even though Benjamin was not involved in their devious plot years ago, he's caught in a net spread for them. Now, what's in your grain sack? I mean, what are you carrying from that God keeps dumping into your grain sack and keep reminding you of some past sin? It's very convicting. Number E, destinations. And Joseph's brothers didn't get so far on their journey with those items that they did not need and that were not theirs to begin with. They ended up right where they started from, facing back with Joseph. We may not get very far on our journey either, carrying all the unnecessary items that bring us right back where we started. A lot of people carry bitterness, they carry a lot of history, and they carry things that God plants in our life like time bombs. Now, here's the accusations. The steward catches up with the caravan, and he proceeds to make accusations against these men. He told them that someone stole the favorite cup of his Lord. They were the ones that had dined with his Lord the night before. They were most likely suspects. So he needed to search their belongings. We can only wonder why the brothers were so gullible when they did not pack or load their grain, not knowing that the steward did. So here's the cup. The cup in question, according to the steward, was not an ordinary cup. It was used by his master to discern or judge between good and evil, right and wrong, and make important decisions. Now, the truth of the matter is, Joseph didn't use the cup to discern. This is evident by his statements about interpreting dreams and giving the credit to God. Joseph did not tell the steward to say the cup was used for discerning. The steward was probably superstitious. All he did was he said, put my cup in there. Now, the steward is just doing what his master says. That's the steward. Now, this is very most interesting. His steward is told to put everything in there and then to accuse them of stealing. The steward knows the whole plot, doesn't he? And yet, what does the steward do? He goes along with it.
Oh, yeah.
He goes along with it. I can't tell you how frustrating it is in the ministry that I can see how struggle and how hard it is the higher up you go in the leadership and things. And how easy it is to abuse power. But, there is something that is accomplished when people just trust leadership. There is a bigger plan that's going on than what you can see. And that's why in the military, you've only been in, you've been in Northern Ireland, you've only been here in Ireland, you've never been in the military, have you? You've never been in the military. Have you ever been in the military in India? Did they make you go to conscript you to army for 2 years or anything?
I was a scout.
You were a scout? Me too.
Yeah.
Now, I never was in the military. My dad was. But in the military, you know what they teach you? Absolute obedience. Absolute. Where if they say hit the dirt, you don't know why, you just... If they say run, you run until they tell you to stop. And they beat that into you. Why? Because that's the only way to operate. Right? Now this servant, he could be going, man, why? First he tells me to put it in, then he tells me to accuse them and to make them liars. He could be very frustrated. But no, he trusts his leadership. And it is very important that there's trust and there is obedience. And that's what we say, trust and obey. So when it comes to God, and I can understand in ministry how hard it is to get people to trust God. Why? Because they've learned you can't trust anybody else. You've been burned by so many other people. But here's an illustration of a servant. Now, I have not figured out who the servant is a type of yet. Joseph is a type of Jesus. Who is the servant? I can only guess a servant is a pastor, a missionary, a church planter, somebody trying to do something for God, serving God and interacting with people, trying to get them right with God. That's my guess. So, but here, sometimes the Lord asks me to do things that don't make sense. Did not Ezekiel, did you know Ezekiel was told to strip naked and go and lay on his side out in the middle of the street for 300 days? Every day he would go and he'd just lay down. People had to walk around him and walk over him. He was told, now eat your own dung. He went, Lord, you wouldn't ask me to do that. He's all right, don't eat your dung, eat, I think it was cow dung or something like that, right? Okay, good. He was asked to do very strange things. He was told when his wife died, not to shave his head, not to rip his clothes, not to go into mourning. So, sometimes God asks pastors to do things or to ask other people to do things that don't fully make sense. And can you agree? It makes it hard, doesn't it? It makes it hard. What is pastor doing? I've been there. I don't know. But sometimes God does that. So this is just a great illustration of a servant who's just willing. If God asked me to go to Afghanistan tomorrow, I would argue with him, fight with him, weep and cry, but then I'd pack my bags and I'd go. I'd have to. Because he's God. Right? I'm just a servant. So it's just a very, very practical thing here. This servant is a great guy. But you have to think about it. He says that's the Lord, that's the cup that my master uses to make decisions. Really? Maybe in Egypt, now here's your conclusion. Maybe in Egypt they didn't have a scepter. What is the scepter? A scepter was a sign of authority. And so that scepter was there, that when he had that scepter in his hand, you know, Caesar would have a raised thumb or a lowered thumb, you know, based on showing power. But by his scepter, some rulers use scepters to rule. But maybe Joseph used it to, when he had it in his hand, when that cup was in his hand, he was making a statement. It was ex cathedra. He could not be questioned. Not that he used it for power. But, you know, maybe the idea is the servant may have thought it, but it's not true.
Right, where are we on this?
We're on number 3 on the accusations.
Yeah, page 64.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
now number D. And Benjamin is found out to be guilty. Where do they find the... verse 11, they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground. They opened every man his sack. And he searched. He began at the eldest and left at the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Boy, if not only Benjamin is guilty, everyone is guilty. This was a simple ploy to get the brothers to thinking and asking questions about this man. If he did indeed use the cup to discern, what else was it that he knew about them that they thought was a secret between the 10 brothers? If this man sent word to their father telling him the truth about the disappearance of... What if this man actually sent word back to his father and says, I know where your son went and what happened. Do they believe that the man that's second in command in Egypt, do they believe that he's Joseph yet?
No.
They just believe he knows everything. They're terrified. There's nothing like having a little sin hidden in your life and then someone asks you about it and the conscience immediately begins to play, what if, or what have I done now? Gains, often we speak and act in fear of situations like these. Sometimes the burden is so great we confess just so we can get the burden removed from our lives. So Joseph has a twofold plan here. Bring the brothers to a point where they confess their sins and determine if Benjamin is really treated well. What did they, see, if they find out that Benjamin has the cup, what could they have done if they hated Benjamin? I'm talking about his brothers.
They could, okay.
Yeah, what could they, if they really hated Benjamin, like they hated Joseph, what could they have done when the servant finds it and everybody raises, you know, everybody looks and they see, here's Benjamin with the cup. What could they have done?
Like later, I say, we told you not to take this.
Yes.
Or say, well, we knew
him. I knew he was a bad kid. I knew that kid would get us in trouble. So it was a test to see, do they care about Benjamin? It's very well calculated. All right. Back to Egypt. Going back to Egypt. So in verse, starting there in verse 13. All right, so we got 13. It says, then they rent their clothes, and they laded every man his ass, and returned to the city. And Judah and his brethren came to Joseph's house, for he was yet there, and they fell before him on the ground. There they are, falling again. And Joseph said unto them, what deed is this that ye have done? Wot ye not, know ye not, that such a man as I can certainly divine with or without my cup? And Judah said, what shall we say unto my lord? What shall we speak? Or how shall we be clear ourselves? God hath found out the iniquity of thy servants. Behold, we are my Lord's servants, both we and he also with whom the cup is found. And he said, God forbid, there's that word again, he uses God. God forbid that I should do so, but the man in whose hand the cup is found, he shall be my servant. And as for you, get you up in peace unto your father. Now, they just... it looks like they stolen money. And he still's not caring about the money. He only cares about the cup. Then Judah came near unto him and said, O my Lord, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word unto my Lord's ears. And let not thine anger burn against thy servant. For thou art even as Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have ye a father or a brother? And we said unto my Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, a little one. And his brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother, and his father loveth him. And thou saidest unto thy servants, will bring him down unto me, that I may set mine eyes upon him. And we said unto my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. And thou saidest unto thy servants, except your youngest brother come down with you, ye shall see my face no more. And it came to pass, when we came up unto thy servant, my father, we told him the words of my Lord. And our father said, go again and buy us a little food. And we said, we cannot go down. If our youngest brother be with us, then we will go down. For we may not see the man's face except our youngest brother be with us. And thy servant, my father, said unto us, ye know that my wife bare me now 2 sons. In comes Joseph. You know that my wife bare me 2 sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn in pieces, and I saw him not since. This is still Jacob speaking. If ye take also from me, take this also, this child also from me, and mischief befall him, ye shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to thy servant, my father, this is Judah now speaking, when I go back home to my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass, when he seeth that the lad is not with us, that he will die. And thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant, my father, with sorrow to the grave. For thy servant became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up to his brethren, with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad not be with me? Lest peradventure I shall see evil that shall come on my father. So number one, Judah intercedes for Benjamin. And Judah makes a defense. When the servant first appeared to the men, Judah said that the one who had the cup must die. He was so sure that none of them had the cup that he would be so bold and audacious to make such a remark. However, after the steward found the cup in the sack of Benjamin, and after going back to Egypt facing Joseph, Judah changed his vow and simply said that the one that had the cup would be a servant along with the others. On the bottom of the page there that you just were on. Joseph's reply, Joseph had no intention of putting Benjamin to death. Aren't you glad that people can overrule your vows? That's why the Bible says if your wife makes a vow, the husband can say, no. That's, so there are ways to overrule a vow, even very strong vows like a marriage vow. Two people, a brother and sister, try to get married, and they went to the justice of peace, and then they find out their brother and sister, it can be annulled. It can be reversed. So Joseph, thankfully, can overrule a vow of death. And he's not no intention of putting Benjamin to death. So knowing the hearts of his brothers, Joseph probably assumed that if he had Benjamin killed, the brothers would just lie and say that he died accidentally back to his dad. Never about their own part in it. So, and Joseph doesn't want them to go home and let his father have a heart attack, all right? So Judah repeats his vow of surety in C. Here in his speech, Judah made to Joseph about the relation between Benjamin and Israel. The reader is presented with several pictures. One of the most vivid pictures is when we allow Jacob to represent God the Father. Benjamin represents mankind. Joseph is a type of the Holy Ghost, and Judah is a type of Christ. Once we visualize these men in these roles, we understand a little more of what Jesus did for us, dying, taking the place so someone else could be saved. And there are lots of types in here. As a matter of fact, let's look at them. I mean, that's not the only kind of typology here. All right, we've already seen a typology where Pharaoh is a type of who? He's a type of God the Father. All right, he's not a bad guy at this point. There arises a Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, and he takes on the type of the Antichrist. All right, what was Joseph? What did he in type represent? Jesus, all right, the Son of God. He's second in power only to the Father. Alright? So we got some types there. But here, when we have Benjamin, alright? Benjamin, in all typology, really, in the best thing, Benjamin is directly related to Joseph, isn't he? He's the type of the nation of Israel. He's also a type of, and I'm just giving you some ideas, he's also a type of all mankind, ultimately. All right? And about to die, okay? And there's nothing stopping him. There's guilt placed upon him. There's no way that they can defend him and protect him or whatever. All right? Judah now steps up, and Judah, this is what's so funny. Now, there is all kinds of backs and forth. I know we have Joseph as the Son of God, but now let's make it. Joseph is not only the Son of God there, a Savior of the world, he's also a judge, isn't he? And he's about to condemn a whole family. And in that picture, Judah steps forward, and what does Judah become? He becomes a type of Christ. The type of Jesus Christ. All right? Jesus substituting himself to save Benjamin. Okay? So, now before, Judah was the Antichrist. Ultimately, he wanted Joseph dead, and he settles for selling him. He settles for selling Joseph. But Judah was the one who says, let's kill him. Now he's saying, take my life. So there's all kind of pictures in here. There's not just one fixed typology. And it's just very good to just have your mind open to things at work, right? So it's a substitution made. Go down to number E. He says, how shall I face my father? And number F, Judah asks to take the punishment instead of Benjamin, and he's willing to take it. He says, verse 34, how shall I go to my father? Nevertheless, I pray thee, verse 33, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman. Whatever you want to do with me, I'm your slave. But let the lad go up with his brethren. All right. Do you have chapter 45? In your pages? So you got the next book? Okay, let's go to chapter 45. See if we can do this very quickly. Now that's how a great story is written. You leave it hanging. What's Joseph going to do? I know we're moving fast.
I don't have it.
You don't have chapter 45?
No.
Wait, I only gave you 44.
Yeah.
Did I? You don't have 45 either? Hold on.
I have probably the quick page.
All right. You do have chapter 45. Okay, Joseph is alive. This is probably one awesome chapter. I think you'll see some surprising things here that you never read before. Judah has finished his plea to substitute himself for Benjamin. Joseph is moved with such compassion on his brothers. At this point, Joseph reveals his identity to the brothers. What made his revelation so Christ-like is because it is a private matter reserved for the family. And there is coming a day where the Jews will realize just how openly Jesus revealed himself to the Jews once, well, at a time back 2,000 years ago, but he's going to do it again in the middle of the tribulation. That's a lot to talk about there. It was only after Joseph's servants left the room that Joseph makes himself known. The moment of revelation is a threefold picture of the fellowship Jesus has had with his and will have with his family. So one of these is when he had fellowship with his disciples after Judah left the room on the upper room. When Jesus was alone with his 11 disciples, like Joseph is alone with his 11 brothers, the devil, Judas, had left them. Right? Jesus gave the disciples a new commandment that they should love one another. Notice, is that not Joseph's desire to get all of his brothers to love one another? They had hated Joseph, and now Jesus, taking the same situation, looks to his 11 brothers. He says, guys, I want you to love one another. That's my whole goal. Instead of trying to get each other killed, instead of being envious of one another, I want you to love one another. Eric, do you understand the typology there? Jesus and his 11 compared with Joseph and his 10 other brothers and stuff, and 11 other brothers, sorry. And it's just so powerful. They both are working at trying to get them to get along with one another. So number two, the second picture is of that private time between the Savior and the sinner. The confession that one is a sinner is a private matter between the Creator and the creature. That's us. It's only after a private confession that the born-again child of God makes a public confession, accepting Jesus as their Savior. You know, Jesus reveals himself to you when you finally crumble and you say, I'm lost, God, save me. And all of a sudden you realize the Lord has revealed himself to you. Number three, the third picture is here is when Joseph and his brothers, is a private revelation that the church will enjoy with her husband. It's called the wedding of the Lamb. It's not the wedding of the Jews. The Jews don't wed Jesus. John the Baptist is the last of the Jews in the Jewish nation, and he says, I'm a friend of the groom, I'm not a bride. It's the Jew and the Gentile who get this special relationship with Jesus Christ, and that's how come I'm pre-trib, because the bride doesn't go through the tribulation. The bride is related to the groom, and the Jews and the Gentiles that are left go through the tribulation. It's just unbelievable. The great picture. We have such a relationship with Jesus that the Jews don't have and Gentiles won't have. So we have a future wedding with the Lamb. It's in public. But the marriage of the Lamb is between the husband and wife. It's a private thing that we have with him. So let's look in chapter 45 and verse 1. Starts off here. And it says, then Judah could not refrain himself before all of them that stood by him, and he cried. And he says, cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh, they heard it. He was just crying so loud. And Joseph said unto his brethren, and I'm sure he's speaking pure Hebrew now, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? Does he really live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And she could, would you believe him if he said he was Joseph? I wouldn't believe him. I'd say, well, what are you doing now? This is another test. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourself. Only Joseph would know what he's about to say. Don't be grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither. For God did not send me before you. For God did send me before you to preserve life. So here's a revelation. This moment, Joseph's waited so long to be able to do it. And I think it may freak you out. Should I tell you? All right, well, I won't. Let me just say just some of the things, because I want to finish this chapter.
No, you're freaking me out. Tell me.
All right. We are very protective of our nakedness on purpose. And when he asks his disciples, he asks his brothers to come closer, he shows them that he is circumcised, is what I think, what I have read, and I fully agree, because only a Jew, only a descendant of Jacob would have been circumcised. So he gives him a little glance. He says, I am really your brother, because they would not have believed him any other way. That's just freak you out to get you to realize this is amazing. This has to be Joseph. It's not just a person who can see things like the man was supposed to be able to do. He can divine. But no, this has to be really Joseph. So this is just such a when you see Jesus in heaven, how are you going to know it's him? Okay, there's a sign. There's look at the scars. He's kept those scars so that he's not just some angel. He is the literal Son of God. So it's just phenomenal the words that are pouring out of Joseph. And again, the typology, look there. He says, don't be grieved in verse 5. God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are yet 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, to save your lives by a great deliverance. So when Jesus died, and somebody was talking to me the other day and saying about how their father doesn't believe in God because his brother was a Christian, but everything in his life has failed. So if you're a Christian, your God failed you. And I told him, I said, well, remind your father about Jesus, because Jesus looks like a pretty big failure too. But it wasn't a failure. That was God's plan. And even though that other man, the brother, the uncle there, is going through a valley and going through what looks like a failure, if he's a Christian, God's in charge. And it is not a failure. So when you're going through things and things are falling apart, you got to remember, God's doing it. All right? God, you're going to have to trust, is in control. So, verse 8. So now it was not you that sent me hither. Now, was it them? I want to blow your minds. Like I said, some of these things I don't know if I should say or not. They came up with the idea. They designed a way to, first, they figured out how to kill him, and then they said, no, let's make money off him. I'm not a Calvinist, which means God didn't put evil in their mind. But when Joseph looks back on that event, he does not look at the devil and does not see the devil at work. He doesn't see his brothers at work. Who does he see at work? So, were they filled with the devil? Yes or no? Yes, they were. Were they filled with anger and envy and revenge? Yes. God has none of those characteristics. He didn't put the thoughts in their mind. But as a believer and as Joseph, when he looks back at all the trouble in his life, he makes a conscious, by faith, decision to say that was God. Not that he's attributing evil to God, but that he says God was in control of that and managed what was evil to bring out good. That ought to blow you away. No matter what evil, no matter what things people do to you, and they are responsible for what they did. You talk about people who sexually abuse little boys and little girls. God's not in that. But the person who's been abused can look and say, God can make this turn out good. God didn't mean for it to be evil. God allowed it, and God's working it, and if I trust God, God will make it come out for good. And that's the only way you can get through that thing. You can't, even if you kill the person, and you should, who has done something like that to a child, that's not going to fix it. But when you are able to turn around and say, God did this for good, then God's able to heal. All right. So it is one of the most powerful chapters in the entire Old Testament about how you've got to look at life. You cannot look at it calling for justice, calling for revenge. They may need to pay with their lives, and I would completely agree. But this is just such a revelation about how to forgive. So he tells him, he says, it was not you that sent me hither, but God, and he hath made me a father to Pharaoh. Pharaoh thinks he's in charge, but I'm like a father to him. He looks to me for advice. And he's made me lord of all his house and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye and go up to my father and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen. And thou shalt be near unto me, thou and thy children and thy children's children, and thy flocks and thy herds and all that thou hast. And there will I nourish thee. I'll take care of you. For there yet 5 years of famine, lest thou and thy household and all that thou hast come to poverty. And behold, your eyes see in the eyes of my brother Benjamin, that it is my mouth that speaketh unto you. He's speaking with their tongue, with his tongue, with Hebrew. And ye shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that ye have seen, and ye shall haste and bring down my father hither. And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck, and he wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brethren, and wept upon them. And after that, his brethren talked with him. After that, they were able to say something. For that, they're gobsmacked. And then they're all talking, and I mean, what do you think they talked about?
Memories.
Yeah? Is it really you? Joseph, what's happened to you? What happened after they took you? And I think Joseph just began to describe them. We're so sorry, oh Joseph, I don't know why we did it. And I bet it was just free-flowing. It was just so sweet. We're so sorry.
Emotional talks.
Oh, it was very emotional. My goodness. Yeah, there's a lot of crying going along, and there wasn't one woman in there.
Men cry are different from women.
Yeah. And the fame thereof. So there was crying, but then everybody's listening. I bet you the servants of Pharaoh were outside the door listening, going, okay. It's his brothers! Go to-. And then the gossip began to spread throughout the palace and everything, and they're just spreading around. The fame thereof was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brethren are come. And it pleased Pharaoh well and his servants. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, say unto thy brethren, this do ye, lade your beasts, load up your beasts, and go get you into the land of Canaan. Take your father and your households, and come unto me. Joseph has said, I'll do all this for you. And then Pharaoh says, bring them to me. Now that is the relationship Joseph has with his brothers. Pharaoh says, I'll adopt you. On the basis of my relationship with Jesus Christ, God says, you're welcome in the family. I want you guys. It is, the parallels are uncanny. So, take your father and your households, come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and ye shall eat the fat of the land. Now, thou art commanded. This do ye, take your wagons out of the land of Egypt for your little ones. They didn't have wagons before, did they? They just had some donkeys. And he says, take your wagons. We got wagons? Yeah, take some wagons with you. Out of the land of Egypt, for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Regard not your stuff. Abandon whatever you got back there. For all the good of the land of Egypt is yours. What's that a type of? What's that a picture of, Barry?
Heaven.
Yeah, I think it's a picture of heaven. Of heaven itself. Don't carry the things of this world and make it so important, because one of these days, leave it behind, we're going to be going home to heaven, and God the Father's got so much there. He says, forget about your stuff, man. Now it's you can maybe apply it to your old life, and don't bring all your baggage into the new Christian life and into the kingdom of God. But I think it's a good picture of heaven. I just skipped over there. Haste ye. This is for, where am I?
21.
Yeah, I'm way off. And the children of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them wagons according to the commandment of Pharaoh, and gave them provisions for the way. To all of them he gave each man changes of raiment, gave him sets of clothes. But to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of raiment. I question, if Benjamin... let's see. Is a type, that is, if he is a type of the nation of Israel, mankind, secondary, what are his other brothers? A type of?
Gentiles?
Yeah, possibly. I would say his other brothers is everyone else. Okay, let me just say it this way, all right?
Would that include the Jews?
Yeah, maybe. But let me just show you what I'm showing you here. Joseph's direct relationship to Benjamin is so close that he gets the most benefit of this new salvation. Now, his other brothers, they're in on it, everything's great, but my comparison is, I'm in on this thing, but I know very well God's going to honor the Jews more than he's going to honor me. Jews are, they get the gospel first, to the Jew first, and also to the Gentile, but God has a special, he keeps protecting the Jews when he won't protect me. Alright, there is a special place, just like Benjamin had. Now, some of these comparisons don't go forever and ever and ever, and I can't say they're exact, and they follow all of the rules of typology, but it's a neat comparison. Benjamin gets special honor that the other brothers don't have. Verse 23, and to his father he sent after this manner 10 asses laden with the good things of Egypt, and 10 she-asses laden with corn and bread and meat for his father by the way, to come home, to come back with. So he sent his brethren away, and they departed. And he said unto them, see that ye fall not out by the way. What is he worried about?
Getting hurt.
No, not getting hurt.
Getting robbed.
No.
They lost.
Attacked. No.
Not coming back to them.
See that ye fall not out by the way. Have you ever had a falling out?
Well, to be God's way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're talking about arguing?
Yes. A fallout is, don't you guys get into a fight and blow it going home to get daddy. I know you guys. You've now found your brother. You've now been blessed beyond imagine. You've been saved. Don't blow it. Don't get into a fight and argue and end up losing everything. Just stay together. Go get dad and come back here. Hold things together. See that you fall not out. Isn't that what Christianity is supposed to be doing? Making sure we don't fall out along the way until we get home to him.
We do.
We do. We do. All right. So, where do we go? See that you fall out. Verse 25 now. And they went up out of Egypt, and they came in the land of Canaan. I bet they were racing pretty quickly unto Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is yet alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart fainted. I bet he hadn't heard Joseph's name in years. I bet he wouldn't allow him to talk about it. And they're talking like he's alive, and he believed them not. And when they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said unto them, and when he saw the wagons with Joseph, which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob, their father, revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Joseph, my son, is yet alive. I will go down and see him before I die. So, one of the biggest turnarounds probably in history, 20 some odd years without Joseph, thinking he's dead, hearing that he's alive. Is that not how the disciples felt when Jesus rose from the grave and said, it's really me? And they're walking along going, I think Jesus talked to us at the tomb, but I'm not sure. Peter's running and going to check, and I don't know if I believe this. And wow, it took a while for those disciples to get it all figured out. That
but like
really
Joseph was revealing himself to him, it was like the two disciples were on the road to Emmaus.
Yes, it is. Exactly.
Like the upper room.
So this happened after...
In the upper room where he appears, and they think he's a spirit, and he says the spirit doesn't have flesh and bones as I do. I'm sorry, there. What are you going to say?
This happened after 20 years.
This is 22, 23 years. Yes, it's quite a
after
while.
Joseph got into the post, is it?
Yes. So he's a grown man, but he's still the same guy. And I'm telling you, I mean, what would you do if you had to try to convince somebody who thought you were dead that you really are alive? You tell them, remember when you, put that frog in my bed when I was 6 years old and I screamed, and he goes, only you would know about that, you know. So I just wanted to get to 45. 45 is a great, great chapter. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to go through it and see all the buildup of the pictures to get me being able to say this typology. It's not well understood because people, they see a great story, but they don't see this is pointing to Jesus and pointing to the disciples and pointing to all mankind and how hard it is to believe that he actually would be alive. Because we put him on the cross. Why would he be alive? Why would he care about those? His brothers are going to be one concern on their mind. When is Joseph going to get revenge? That's going to be on their mind. Even when Jacob dies, they're going to say, Daddy told you not to hate us. Because they're afraid that one day Joseph's going to say, I got to get them back. I have to hurt them back, at least a little bit. And he can't do it. It's just breathtaking about the picture's typology for the Christian and for a church. All right. I'm not even going to talk about my notes. My notes are in there. You can just review. But you get that picture, you'll be a different man. You'll see the life of a Christian so different that we've been given so much at the resurrection of Christ. We can't fall out. We just can't fall out, man. We got to stay the course. All right. We got to quit. There are some questions there at the end, just giving you some ideas of hopefully what you learned. Try to answer those things that will help you in understanding this chapter. And in the next few days, next few weeks, we'll be through. Coming in December, guys. Coming in fast.
When will we finish in December?
13th. But that's the final. So we'll actually be finished the week before, which is the 6th. That'll be the last lesson in the review of all of this stuff to get you prepared for the final. So the 6th will be the actual last teaching lesson.
How many chapters?
Yeah, they're total of 20 summaries, yes.